Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird's jetzt richtig hitzig. Und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
It's the season finale of Winter Day Hockey O'Clock. It's episode 212. For this episode, we saved this one for something very special. It's only the greatest goaltender the Winter Day Ice Hockey League has seen. He's got the most games, he's got the most wins, he's got the most shutouts. If you're looking for records, look no further than to this man. It is Jean-Philippe Lamoureux, and JP, it's an incredible honor. Did you follow our call to Vienna to talk a little hockey and to talk about your great career? Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thanks for the invite, Martin. Happy to be here.
JP, there's loads of stuff to get into. We'll hear from fellow players that you played with and played against. We'll have a look at stats. We'll have a look at some of the things that made you so great. But first and foremost, for the people now listening to this on the regular podcast feed, you can also see this, and I'd really advise you to go to the show notes of this podcast, the Winter Day Hockey O'Clock, scroll down a little bit and look for a YouTube link. Click that YouTube link and see Jean-Philippe Lamoureux in all of his beauty and see him giving his expertise over the course of the next hour or so. Tons of stuff to get into, but the most important thing, and I kind of have to preface this a little bit, because when I saw the clip at the beginning of January that you would eventually call it a career, it immediately made me go like, this is indeed the best and most consistent goalie I've seen while covering the league. And when you start doing your research and compare your career in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League to the all-time greats, some of the supposed all-time greats diminished because of volume, wins, everything that you brought to the table. But just retirement itself, when players get up there in age, at what point did you first think of calling it a career, and what made you eventually do it and decide on I think February 7th to call it a career?
Yeah, well, it was wasn't an easy decision, but part of it was when I had left Salzburg, I had an initial goal. I wanted to play about three more seasons, which is eventually what I ended up doing. I thought I always had a long-term goal since I started my professional career to try to play till 40. It is sort of rare air for goaltenders. And so to me, that was, I had kind of crossed the finish line in my mind, and I kind of wanted to start a new journey, and I want to get into coaching. I want to be an assistant coach to hopefully be a head coach at some point. And so I thought it was good timing as far as trying to start the next chapter.
We'll get to the career trajectory and what might await at the tail end of this. But as stated, we prepared a ton of stuff, and we have our own statistician that provided some of the incredible stats that you accumulated. And just for the sake of the argument, let's have a look at the first graphics and just the sheer body of work here in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League. You played 14 years in the league for four teams, 396 wins. Normally, if a goaltender gives you a chance to win half the games, you take that. You gave your team a chance to win in more than 6 out of 10 games you played, 50 shutouts, and interestingly enough, 176 penalty minutes. We'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
Just looking at that body of work, what goes through your mind first?
Well, I walk back. So the way I kind of always structured how I set goals for the season is I look at everything in like a 10-game segment. And so my goal, my basement floor is I want to make sure I'm winning 6 out of every 10 games. And obviously you're going to vary with that through the peaks and valleys of a season and a career. But that benchmark is that's what I got to try to hit every single 10-game segment. And so just by looking at that, I think what I'm most proud of is the 60% win percentage, because it's pretty bang on to what the micro goals are. And, you know, being part of the 396 wins, that's not really an individual stat. That's a team award, in my opinion. So being able to be behind some great players and great coaches to get that. Those are kind of what are most important to me. And then two of them that aren't on there are the championship teams. It's tough to be part of a championship team. Got to do it with two different clubs and two special clubs, because I believe it's the only two clubs that went undefeated in playoffs. And so to be part of those teams in Vienna and Salzburg was a real highlight of my career.
Actually, there are a lot of numbers on there, or a lot of numbers that haven't made the cut in the first place. We'll have a body of work graphics a little later in the show too. But let's just start with the last number on here, the 176 penalty minutes. And that was my welcome to the league moment with Jean-Philippe Lamoureux, when you, as a Ljubljana goaltender, and you only played 1 year there, in Villach, of all places, had a little run-in with the referee. That was kind of the start of the penalty minutes accumulating. And just for history's sake, we try to look at other goaltenders and their penalty minutes. Some of them played so long ago that we don't have actual numbers. We assume that this is also a record for goaltenders. How often did hothead JP Lamoureux really make an appearance, and how often did you have to suppress what you were feeling inside?
Well, I think that the stat that probably my dad would be favorite of would be the penalty minutes, I think, because when he played, so he's a goaltender in the 80s, but he was a fiery guy, you know, sort of a fiery Frenchman mentality. And, you know, but joking aside, it was kind of a part of my personality where I think when I was in my younger years, for sure, always felt like I had something to prove. I was always considered an undersized goalie, and at each level, I had to prove or do a little bit more work to give myself an opportunity at each next level. And so that would kind of spill over in some of the games in heated moments. And, you know, the moment you're referencing for sure is probably one of the most fiery moments I probably showed in the league. But had to work really hard to try to be able to walk that back, because there's a line that a goaltender can't cross as far as letting your emotions spill over and affecting the outcome of the game. And in that moment too, it was a moment where I stepped over the line, and it kind of cost our team in the moment.
Maybe let's get this undersized label out of the way. I personally hate it, because it doesn't matter if it's the National Hockey League or the Winter Day Ice Hockey League, smaller quote-unquote players are shown that they do belong too. But especially when talking about the National Hockey League, they just have a certain size threshold, and Justus Saros is doing all the things for the quote-unquote undersized goaltenders. But how tough is it to live with that tag once it's been attached to you?
I think you just have to accept reality. So once I started playing junior hockey, you get exposed to all the testing for the NHL Combine coming up. So, you know, as a 17, 18, 19-year-old playing juniors in the USHL, you know, they not only look at your stats for your output for the season, but, you know, they look at the physical attributes too, your height and weight and strength and all that stuff. And it was always deemed kind of too small to play in the NHL, too small to play pro hockey. And I get it. It's something that is an uncontrollable physical characteristic of me. But as long as I always accepted it and just said, you know what, I have to find other ways to contribute to stand out over guys that are 4 or 5 inches taller than me. And so you kind of carry that chip on your shoulder, because you want to prove that you can play. And if you produce, you want to get the opportunity. And sometimes that's not always the case. But certainly that's kind of where that, I would say that chip kind of started from, was the early junior years. And, you know, I'm certainly not the only one. There's a lot of undersized goalies that are great, that have had great careers. And, you know, it's just, it's an unfair reality, but you have to accept it, and something that you can't change either.
17 years of pro hockey later, I guess there is a laugh or two in the faces of people who said you'll never play pro hockey. But before you play pro hockey, you had the distinct honor of playing at an honor-loaded team with the University of North Dakota. You're from North Dakota. You ended up playing for the premier program out of state. How was that for you?
That was my NHL. That was my dream come true. So without question, for the European fans that don't know, North Dakota is probably one of the more prestigious universities that you can attend. You comfortably put it in the top five in the country. And then, you know, fans will debate over, you know, what's number one. But it was my NHL. It's the fan support, the funding for the program, and then not to mention just the quality coaches and players that you come through. I mean, you're going to look through, you know, year by year, and you're going to have anywhere from 6 to 10 draft picks on the roster. So I got exposed to some great players as a young college student, and you know, I just wanted to prove that I belonged in that roster, because you look at how great a lot of those players turned out. It was a lot of young guys pushing each other who wanted to be great.
And I've always been adamant, and this goes to the people out there, please start following NCAA hockey, not only because NIL has drastically changed the landscape, but the sport has gotten so much better. And we just had Troy Ward, who's an associate head coach for Minnesota State at Mankato, on the program a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about the transition college hockey has been going through. We just had an incredible Frozen Four a couple of weeks ago. So if there's ever a good time to get into college hockey, it's probably right now or come September and October. And just because of the fact that UND is such a special program and UND has so many great alums, I thought it'd be a good idea to collect a soundbite from a fellow UND alum who might have also gotten the undersized label and proved a lot of people very wrong. One of the all-time greats for Red Bull Salzburg, it is Ryan Duncan, and he's got a message for you.
Jean-Philippe, Ryan Duncan here. Trying to think of a story or two, you know, that truly represents who you are as a person and as a player. And I just keep coming back to consistency. Consistency as a player, consistency as a person, consistency as a teammate. Every day you knew what to expect of you. Just a fantastic, you know, role model and inspiration as a teammate. All the work that you put in, how you were team first, did everything to help the team win in any way possible, whether you were starting that night or not. And that continued on into pro. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to play with each other again. You know, we always talked about it, and just missed each other, unfortunately. But I always admired you from afar, especially as your career went on. And just that consistency propelled you into being the consummate pro and having such a long and successful career. And just want to congratulate you. I mean, incredible, you know, what you've accomplished and the mark you've left on the game of hockey. So definitely proud to have been your teammate, proud to have competed against you, hated playing against you, rarely got a puck by you. But no, super excited for this next chapter for you, and looking forward to hopefully seeing you again soon. So enjoy your retirement. Congrats again on the excellent career, and all the best. See you soon.
Well, what can you say there? I don't think there's higher praise than a compliment like that from Ryan Duncan. So, you know, Duncan and I have some history. We were teammates together for 3 years in North Dakota. And for some of the European fans who don't know, I mean, he's a Hobey Baker winner. He's only the second one in our school history. And so to be able to play alongside him while he won that trophy, played on one of the all-time great lines at North Dakota history, where his line mates were Jonathan Toews and TJ Oshie. They called it the dot line, and it was just automatic every time. Seam pass to dunk on the right face-off dot, high glove, automatic. And I think he talked about, I think, between 36, 37, 38 goals, something like that. And he was just an inspirational player, like, as you mentioned, an undersized player at the college level. And then went on to have this incredible career here in Austria as well. So for us to kind of cross paths at the pro level, 4 championships, one of the all-time Red Bull greats. So can't get a better compliment than that from the Hobey Baker winner, Ryan Duncan.
First of all, thanks to Ryan Duncan for sending over this clip, obviously in UND gear, just as ordered. And the Hobey Baker, for all the people out there that don't know, goes to the best player in college hockey. As you said, one of the most prestigious awards, and Ryan Duncan has won it. What he alluded to was your incredible consistency, you being incredibly consistent. Where did this process of trying to stay and remain as consistent as possible start?
Just example from my parents, for sure. So my dad was a goaltender in the 80s, and then he was kind of, like I had mentioned before, kind of a fiery Frenchman. Felt like he had a lot to prove, but competed like hell in practice and to make the team in North Dakota. And then my mom, believe it or not, she was a really disciplined athlete in her own right. She was a record-setting swimmer in high school in North Dakota. And then after school, she became a competitive runner on her own, ran 26-plus marathons. And then growing up, watching how she would train, you know, my parents had 6 kids in 5 years, so we have a set of twins in there. And watching my mom come home early before we would wake up from school, and she'd go get her miles in before we would wake up. So I think just the discipline to, you have a goal and you want to achieve it, you put in the work every day, even on days that you don't feel like it. And so I think for me, it was just the example my parents set day in and day out as we were growing up.
The interesting thing is it's a sportive family. Dad with an athlete background, mom an athlete. All of your siblings played hockey most prominently. Jocelyn and Monique, who also went on to win Olympic gold. Mario, who played a couple of years in our league too. But you became a goaltender. Unlike them, they all played forwards or became forwards and didn't play in the net. Why did you become a goaltender?
Because my father, he was a goaltender, and you grow up, you know, he's taking his boys to the rink, and I love the gear, love watching him play and compete, even though he was playing in men's leagues at the time. And I wanted to try it. I did skate out, you know, and play other positions, I think up until my age 13, and then I kind of picked goaltender full time. But it was just because that's what I was best at. I loved doing it. You know, growing up too, it was, if you needed a goalie, call JP and he'll show up for practice. So I just loved, I loved being in there. It wasn't just practice time. It was skating on the outdoor rinks in North Dakota with my brothers and sisters and neighborhood kids. And that's just what I want to do. I just wanted to take shots all day.
We'll get to the amount of shots that you took at the very least during your Winter Day Ice Hockey League career. But going from North Dakota and getting the labels, won't be playing pro hockey, he's too small. You had a great college career. You went on to the pros. You played for 3 years in North America and then came over to Europe. Why?
Kind of advisement from a goalie coach that I'd work with. He's legendary kind of in the goaltending circles, but Ian Clark was a huge mentor for me through college. We had worked together in the back half of my college career, and he was instrumental in kind of giving me the technical tools and refinement that I think was necessary to be a professional goalie. And so I played my first 3 years, and I would say pretty successful in the minor leagues. But he said that the undersized thing is going to be tough to shake. You can really make a great career over in Europe. And so he was the one who initially kind of gave me the nudge to give it a shot. And, you know, believe it or not, I was initially supposed to go play in Sweden for Modo. And there was an agreement that was put in place with Marcus Naslin. And Ian, under Ian's kind of advisement, said, "This, give this guy a shot. He'll do a great job for you." It just didn't work out. They had an NHL goalie that kind of unexpectedly returned late in the summer and said, "I have to stay for family reasons." And so I kind of lost my spot. And then it was late in the summer, and we're trying to find a place to play just to get started, and then Ljubljana was the kind of the only opportunity at the time. So that's kind of why I ended up in the league, and then the rest is history now.
The rest is definitely history, but Ljubljana, probably not too bad a place as many other international clubs of the league that do serve as stepstones, not only within Winter Day Ice Hockey League circles, but also for bigger leagues in Europe. How was it acclimatizing yourself to the European sized rinks, like all the angles, all the things that go with it, and to a totally new surrounding? Not to take away too much from North Dakota, but I'd imagine it being a little more rural than vibrant Ljubljana and all these old town inner cities that you're having in Europe.
Yeah, well, as far as the ice surface, in college hockey, we actually play a lot of games on Olympic size ice. And then our rink, so my first pro team was, I played for the Alaska Aces my first year pro, and our rink in Alaska was actually Olympic size. So it's kind of ironic, though, that I had a decent amount of experience on the big ice. So coming over here, it wasn't really a big issue for me. It is for maybe some players and goalies on the ice surface. But as far as that, I was really comfortable coming in over here in that regard. And obviously, it's going to be a culture shock moving from North America to here. You have the language barriers, cultural differences. But the biggest thing was I was totally open-minded to anything, any of the possibilities that Europe had to offer. They gave me an opportunity to play, pursue my passion, and try to establish a career over here. And so I was nothing but grateful for that opportunity to be a number one in Europe. I just wanted to show up, do my work, and I believed in myself where if I got the opportunity, I would be able to make the most of it, and was able to play well enough to get another contract and then move on to VLOC, where we had seven great seasons. Just really grateful that I took that advisement from Ian and gave it a shot.
This goes out to the great Ian Clark. Thanks for the piece of advice. Gave us the greatest goaltender in Winter Day Ice Hockey League history. And I want to separate those filler years that you just mentioned into two parts. Your first stint that saw you playing great hockey and ascending to the top of the league. And obviously that second stint to round out your career. I called up one of your old coaches from the first stint, and I thought, who better than Hannu Järvenpää to maybe put in perspective what this career meant and still means. And because it's Hannu Järvenpää, and he's probably the nicest person on the planet, he called back and sent along this video.
Hello, JP. This is your old coach, Hannu, from Helsinki, Finland. Just want to congratulate you for the great achievements, great career in Mid Europe. You did really, really well for us in Ljubljana and also in Finland. I just want to wish you all the best for the future, not just you, but also for your family.
Hannu, one of my all-time favorites. I got.
I think it's everybody's all-time favorite.
Yeah, he was just an incredible. I think what I always remember most about Hannu is the incredible enthusiasm that he brought to the rink every day. He cared more about you as a person than he did as a hockey player, and he just wanted you to feel great every day. And so he was really good at, I think, noticing when guys kind of needed to pick me up. And he just made you feel great about your game, about yourself, every single time you came to the rink. He handled adversity, I thought, really well, where he affected the mood of the team in certain ways. And he was very creative, too, in trying to motivate the teams that he had played for. And got a chance to play with my brother Mario for him. And so we both have some great Hannu stories. And one of the all-time.
Come on, give me a great. Now you set the stage. Give me a great Hannu story.
Well, one of our favorites is, we're down in a playoff series against Bolzano, and we say, you know what, we need to change some things. We need to come in for a video session. And so the boys show up, walk down to the basement in VLOC of the Stadthalle, and everyone's sitting around, and then we're in the weight room. There's all these chairs, and then there's no TV, and so we don't really know what's going on, like, because they're going to be some sort of concert or something down in the basement, but Hannu walks into the room and he starts handing out pieces of paper to all the guys. We're all lined up, and we're like, what is this? And everyone kind of peels the piece of paper that they got, and they start reading it through, and then everyone kind of looks at each other like, I think these are song lyrics. What does he want us to do with song? Are we like going to do karaoke here? And then he said, you know what, guys, we don't need video. We don't need the X's and O's. We don't need any of that. We got each other in here. And he's like, you read these words to this song. And then that's what we're going to do tomorrow. And then so he takes his phone out and he plays Tom Petty, Don't Back Down, on his cell phone in a weight room. And then you have people in the back that are, they kind of have to inch forward because they don't know, they can't really hear because it's on a cell phone. And then so funny thing is we go out, we listen to it, we all laugh about it later. It lightens the room. You know, we didn't go over any video, but then we show up the next day and we win the next game on the road. And it's just, sometimes it's just moments like that where directions that a team can take. It's bigger than what you watch on video, any of the analytics that you want to go over. It is more about the emotion and the one-on-one pride as it takes as a hockey player to win battles that allow teams to win games. And that was just a classic story that my brother and I share because he was in the room with me on that team.
I said it many times before, and I need to address this to the camera. Hannu Jävenpää, you're one of the all-time great coaches, probably the nicest coach I've ever met. And there can't be enough good things said about you. So thank you very much for also sending this over. The interesting thing with you and Hannu being in Fila, you also met another, I'd say, all-time great coach and goaltender coach, Markus Kerschbaumer. And he's been a key cog in preparing for this conversation, obviously. Do you remember your first meeting or your first set of practices with Markus?
Yeah, I coming in late in the summer, and if anybody who knows Kershy loves his golf time in the in Vlach area.
Still does?
Yeah, he certainly does. We're going to try to play later this week, I think. But yeah, he said, hey, meet me on the golf course. We'll talk. And I think what one of the gifts that Kershy has is he can connect with people on a real personal level. He shares a passion for the technical side of the game. He also understands what it's like to deal with the pressures of playing the position. And then I don't think there's a more prepared, detailed coach that I've played for in all areas, whether it's combing through video, putting together a practice plan, making adjustments in practice, and ultimately very collaborative in the practice setting where maybe we'll try something or we're working on a look from a team that we're going to play. And like, you know what, this isn't really working. Let's change it. And just able to adapt, kind of, he's just reading the goaltender and getting a feel for what he's seeing. And I owe such a tremendous amount of gratitude to Kershy because I wouldn't have had the longevity I would have had without working with him day in and day out for, you know, the 4 years in Vlach and then another three in Salzburg.
But this is probably the highest praise a coach can get. If you just look at the leagues and the organizations you played at, and if you label him as one of the most detail-oriented coaches, that's something to behold. And before we get to some of the intricacies of playing the goalie position, and of course Markus helped prepare that as well, you were talking about longevity and him helping you achieve that longevity. Now that's probably one of the holy grails everybody's looking for in hockey, and especially when you talk about playing a goaltender position. How did he and the things he did prepare you for or help you to achieve that longevity?
Well, usually, you know, I do this personally, but Kershy and I would kind of sit down and establish what our season goals were together. We would talk about kind of where we wanted to be. So one, it's, you know, when you announce kind of what your personal goals are for a season, he's able to kind of help keep you accountable. And then it's what sort of things do we have to get better at on a daily basis that are going to help us get there. And so he just did a great job, I think, of understanding the things that I did really well that would highlight my game and then areas that we needed to work on, where areas of the game where, you know, maybe I'm struggling a little bit or I'm giving up more goals in these situations. And then it's just a repetition thing. So he was able to set up a practice format where we were able to highlight the things I did well and then work on the things that I needed to get better at. And then we had fun just going to work together. And it never felt like work. And I don't know the amount of hours and shots that he took on me over those years, but it was truly enjoyable for my end. And I, like I said, the detail and the, I don't know, just the care. It was really more of a friendship than anything else on the ice together. So a lot of fun.
But just to give listeners and viewers out there an impression of things that you were working on a daily basis, or maybe early in your career when you started to work together, what was an area that he started to focus on, where you started to focus on together that you wanted to improve?
It's a great question. It was just, I think the easiest way for the fan to understand is that, you know, we would always start with, say, low percentage type shots, and we're working on just simple puck tracking, reading the puck off the stick, making sure that you're making clean, controlled saves from a stationary position, and then we're going to add movement to it. So then we kind of move to more of a mid-danger situation where you're tracking a pass to a certain location and you're trying to read the shot, and then, you know, you're going to move into a high danger situation where the percentage of chance to score is higher, but you're going to push yourself outside your comfort zone in certain game situations. And so we're able to kind of organize shot type situations that you would see in a game. And then, you know, kind of like I said earlier, the repetition of those situations makes you comfortable for it in the
muscle really, memory.
Yep, exactly. And that's what we're trying to build, so that we're comfortable in the uncomfortable.
When I got in contact and in touch with Marcus, I told him, please give me a couple of clips that show the excellence of Jean-Philippe Lamoureux. And he sent one along that he labeled footwork and tracking. And the way this goes is I'll just show the clip to the viewers and tell a little bit about the things that Marcus sent along, and then you'll be able to run through that clip yourself and just talk a little bit about the things that made you make the save. So Marcus sent along, with these clips, you see how JP reads slot line plays, and he makes it seem effortless because of his exceptional footwork. A lot of goalies with these kind of passes, they would go down to their knees and slide, and they would give up too much space as regards the net, or they would give up too much net. His puck tracking and his ability to read a shot release are unique and have allowed you to set the edge and not go to a butterfly very frequently. Your understanding of box control makes or lets you like difficult shots look easy when you save them because of your understanding of box control. There's so much high praise in there. Yeah. It's really hard to probably just illustrate what you did with three or four clips, but we'll roll this once more, and maybe you can elaborate on a clip or two.
Yeah, okay. So this first one here, we have a shot that goes behind the net, and then we have the player carries the puck behind the slot line. And so I have to connect to my feet in my reverse VH. The puck goes low to high, lateral across, goes across the low slot line, and then I'm able to beat that shot sort of on my feet and make a square save. This one here, end of the game, we got a deposit here. I connect to my post. I know that guy's back door, and I want to get a strong push on the slot line play. That was earlier this year. I think this is, similar one, a high slot line pass, able to beat the pass on my feet and then kind of shift into it because that player's shooting against the grain. One of the big areas that Kirsch and I worked on always is shifting into pucks, reading it off the stick. When you're able to add a little bit of movement, your butterfly technique is you stay more compact, you keep the puck in front of you, you're able to utilize all your size because I need to maximize as much of my body size as I can. And for me, we call it center shifting into the shot lane, was a big reason why I think I was able to be successful on clear-sided shots, and then on the slot line plays that you had shown were, for us, it was having early eyes on the play, beating the pass on the feet, and then if I can shift into the shot lane. And usually it's, if you can beat the pass on your feet, you give yourself a really good chance to make a strong controlled save on the first one.
Now, you said you wanted to get into coaching, but if you're looking for a color analyst out there, look no further than right here. That was excellent. And just, we're talking about muscle memory. I mean, your memory is tremendous. How many, like, if I would throw a random play or random save at you, how fast would you be able to locate it, when and where it was?
Probably instantaneously, like pretty quick. Like I could say game situation.
You faced 21,000 shots in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League.
Yeah.
Jesus. Okay. No further questions. kidding. Yeah. A lot more questions because footwork, and you hear it so often, is so essential, and then again, still underappreciated. If young goaltenders out there are watching this or listening to this, how do you get a good footwork as a goaltender? What things you have to do?
I mean, for us, you're going to be your basic small area skating, where you're practicing basic edge work from your feet and from the down position. And then you want to transition that into your footwork inside the crease, being able to move efficiently. And there's, dozens and dozens of different crease patterns that you can do. I think over the course of a season for a young player is try to find between 5 and 10 crease movement drills that you're working on, where you're working on movement from your feet. Positions where you're having to add a recovery element to the crease movement, and then some movements where you're working on going in and out of your reverse VH. And if you can get really quick and sound and seamless with your movement, that's going to help you tremendously as far as when you get into live drills, where arriving set and square into the shot lane is going to give you a huge advantage over your counterparts if you can be like I said, set and square, and allows you to read the shot off the stick early.
Just to give people an impression, and we've got the playoffs in the National Hockey League going on right now. Which goaltender on planet Earth right now has the best footwork? Who's got footwork where you go like, holy shit, I wish I would have had that?
There's a lot of guys. I have such a tremendous amount of respect for the guys in the NHL, because you look at your true number ones, and these are guys that have mastered all parts of the game. But the guys who really stand out to me, I would say, as far as great footwork, it has to be the Russians at the moment. I put Vasilevsky up there. I put Shesterkin, Ilya Sorokin are great. Another one too is the small Finn that you had mentioned earlier, Jussi Saros. His footwork is outstanding. He's an undersized guy, but as a prerequisite, you have to have outstanding footwork as an undersized goalie. And then I think a new guy that's emerged in the NHL is Dustin Wolf, another small guy.
Calgary.
If you watch his game, a guy who is rarely behind the play, reads the play extremely well, and that's kind of due to his great footwork and his ability to read the play.
What Marcus Cashbaum pointed out with the last clip is that these are difficult saves that you make seem effortless, and more often than not, it's not correct more often than not, but sometimes it got rewarded with a shutout. Zero goals conceded, the holy grail of goaltending, and then obviously for a defensive effort. How important were shutouts in your career?
That was probably the least of all the goaltending stats that you can look at. It's the one I paid attention to the least. To me, it was all about the win percentage. That was the number one benchmark for me. The other thing too, any goaltender, you care about the save percentage. You want that to be a solid number. And then the games played. So for me, it was, are you winning games? Are you consistently, on the right end of the save percentage? And then are you playing a lot? And so those were the three biggest ones for me that I tried to, that I was paying attention to probably on a weekly basis.
And this is where the stars do align for all the people knowing the pod. And maybe you know that too, the first Austrian to ever play an NHL regular season game was a goaltender, was the great Reinhard Divis. And a couple years ago on Winter Day Hockey Clock, I extensively talked to him about his career and everything that went into it, and talked about the stat that he cared about the most. Of course, wins. And he recorded a lot of wins. You recorded a lot of wins, but let history show and let our graphic show that you also recorded a lot of shutouts in your 658 games. And this is what the graphics is going to show. You recorded 50 shutouts. And you broke the record actually in Vienna against Zagreb on December 8th of 2017, you had your 29th shutout, besting Mike Uzes at that time in your 335th league game. Was that a story after the game? Did you just broken the record for shutouts?
I didn't know it was a record at the time. I think our coach had mentioned it after after the game, but it's a nice benchmark. And I think certainly, I don't think it's going to stand too long because it looks like Sebastian's back in Katse, and he's been a master at getting the shutouts year after year, so I don't think that'll stand too long.
Just one more thing on that record-breaking shutout. It was your longest or the most minutes played in your career without conceding a goal. You played for almost 200 minutes back in December 2017. You had three games consecutively where you shut out opponents. And we as media members, and I'm guilty as charged, we always kind of follow narratives. Oh, the goalie is so hot. Nothing goes past him. Do you really start feeling it if you have a shutout? If you're shutting out opponents for another period and another period and another period, does it ever stay the same, or do you really start having that special feel, oh boy, now really nothing gets past me?
I think any goaltender, that's the ultimate feeling that you want, where you feel like there's nothing can get by me no matter what they do.
It's invincibility.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the streak you're referring to, I mean, I had such a strong team in front of me in Vienna, and that allowed me, I think, to have just a ton of success individually there because the structure in front of you was so consistent that it really just allowed me to trust my reads and my ability, which I believe that I'm a strong puck-tracking goalie, makes a good first controlled save, and I think that made for just a real predictable environment for the guys in front of me, and really was enjoyable to play for Vienna for those years.
When looking at this graphics again, you already alluded to it, the guy sitting right behind you, he might come for that shutout record, and I thought it couldn't be a show about goaltending if he didn't get a word to say in this. So I asked Sebastian Dam if he's got anything about the great career and the great Jean-Philippe Lamoureux. This is what he had to say.
Hello, JP. I was glad and honored to be able to send some words your way upon your retirement. It's been only 7 years that we played against each other, but I feel linked to you since the year I took over you with the Alaska Aces. After your fantastic rookie season, I was not able to match your feat, but I truly felt like I gained a rival, and although I don't consider myself playing the other goalie in the net, for me, in the 7 years we played against each other, going up against you always meant going up against the best goalie in the league, so it was hard not to take up that challenge. I have to say, you've been an inspiration for me, not only as a competitor, but also the way you study the game, the way you've been with your family, and the way you have been as a teammate. I've spoken to several of your teammates that I've played with since playing with you. And I have to say also, thank you for all the battles we had out there. It's been an honor and a privilege. And I wish you all the best in your retirement.
Yeah, what can you say with, you know, there's no better compliment than, you know, a rival in the league. And kind of like, I would probably echo what he said, you know, we're not competing against each other as goaltenders, but I think he would have or be close to a lot of the records and games played had he stayed in our league. You know, he had a great opportunity to play in Germany, and certainly another undersized goalie who's done really well for himself in our league. You know, had another finals appearance here this year, and going to go down as one of the all-time greats in the league too when he calls it a career also. So from Sebi, it's a huge compliment coming from him.
First of all, thanks for this message. He is an incredibly busy man, and he took the time at the airport, so that explains the background noise to record that video. So really appreciative of you, Sebastian, sending this on. And I knew from the moment he told me on the podcast last year in Winter Day Hockey Clock that your careers have always been linked, at the very least for him, that he needed to say something once you'd call it a career, because he was unlucky enough to follow you at the Alaska Aces, and for whatever reason, because it's just so random that Alaska has an East Coast Hockey League team, and I always had a soft spot for all the Alaska Aces alumni, and every time I was looking at my stats, Jean-Philippe Lamoureux, Alaska Aces, Sebastian Dam, Alaska Aces, and him then even mentioning then the connection. First of all, how strange was it playing hockey in Alaska, having those basically long-ass trips everywhere you went?
It was probably one of the funnest hockey seasons I've ever had, if I'm being honest. There was it's Anchorage, Alaska is an incredibly beautiful space. You probably wouldn't, if you put two pictures next to each other, it'd be very similar to Austria in some of the parts. But yeah, we spent a lot of time on the road, a lot of West Coast swings. Had a great organization to play for. I think that was one of the reasons why Alaska, you know, now defunct, but was a great team in that league for so many years. They had a great ownership group, would hire good coaches, and went out and got good veteran players. You know, we unfortunately lost in Game 7 of the finals. It was a really memorable year for us. But I remember that finals was we played 7 games in 11 days from South Carolina, traveling all the way to Anchorage, Alaska, for that series. Did a 2-3-2, so it was you played 2 Friday, Saturday. We traveled, and then we did I believe it was a Wednesday, and then Friday, Saturday. Then flew back after, and then played another Friday, Saturday. So it was.
So it was like last series. Year's yeah. Florida Edmonton series, only worse in terms of the traveling.
Yeah, just an extra 6 hours in the plane, I think, is pretty much what you would have.
I think I once read somewhere that you accumulated 400,000 miles on the plane per year, which is unfathomable.
Yeah, it was nuts. A lot of time in the dead time in the Seattle airport, actually, because that was always our connection. So
right,
but. It was a lot of fun. We had a great group of guys, guys that wanted to win a championship, and we were one of the top teams in the league, and then obviously getting to the finals. So it was a lot of fun playing that year.
Still, two Alaska Aces goalies that years later meet in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League. When Sebastian Dam showed up first with Graz and then with Klagenfurt, where he had an even more successful career, how was it for you potentially having that rival, not to put words into your mouth, but how did you see that?
Well, I think it's great. The more great players that we can get into the league, a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think having him in the league for as long as that we've been able to have him, it raises the quality of the goaltending. And when I would go back and train in North Dakota, they would always talk about all the good goaltenders that are coming through Austria and Germany. And, you know, our league is starting to get a reputation of there are a lot of good goalies come through here and play. And so he's been one of them that has raised the standard for the quality of goaltending in the league.
Which you can claim for yourself, too. And this is where another clip from Markus Kerschbaumer comes in. Because when I asked him what makes you so special or made you so special, and I still have to get used to the past tense, he said it's JP's hockey IQ. And if we roll that clip, we'll do it the same same procedure again. I'll just say or label some of the things that Marcus said, and then you can lead us through the situations. If we just look at the clip, Marcus said JP has an incredibly high goalie IQ / hockey sense. He can anticipate things and situations before they even start to develop. His body is always in the right position. He can make all the saves. He can really feel what his opponent is thinking, and this is why he's got this great level of anticipation. Again, high praise, great words coming from an even greater coach, and a lot of saves that don't, like, on the surface, and I'm considering myself on the outside looking in, that don't seem too spectacular, but Marcus assured me these are plays and saves every goaltending coach is marveling at, just because of the things that happen before you even touch the puck.
Well, I can probably maybe speak for Marcus, not totally, but what he's going to be looking for here is the footwork, the sight line.
And we'll roll that clip.
We'll go back to the first one here.
But we'll roll that clip in the entirety again, and now the stage is all yours.
Yeah. So on this play here, we're going to play in the corner, and I'm trying to fight through traffic. So we're using a tall stance, beat the pass from the point. There's a broken play. shot, and then we have an unpredictable rebound there, and so kind of more of in a desperation play there. Here we got a point shot here, trying to locate through traffic. All right, I established my low reverse position because I know that there's a net front deflection option, so we want to protect low middle part of the net. Here what we got, penalty kill situation. Player is going to pick the puck, come out from behind the goal line. I go into actually a VH here because I want to protect the vertical part of the net, but it also gives me an opportunity to get across. We have a low slot line pass here, and I try to beat that on my feet, and I'm able to get close to the puck shooter there. Here, again, we got play up top, trying to locate through traffic, goes low. And then here, I'd probably prefer to have a better rebound here, but the situation there is they had a pass option, and the guy was shooting for a rebound. So protecting the low part of the net, the play does get to the slot, but because I'm attached to the post low and early, I'm able to transition off my post into a blocking butterfly position on the rebound and able to get a whistle. So here we got to play off the faceoff. We lose the draw. We have a deactivation low here. And then so this went, Salzburg had a play here where the weak side D here, which was not really defense, and it was Huber, but he would activate off the faceoff. And so they would either shoot for a rebound or look for that low slot line play if it was there. And so I was able to get across, arrive set and square in a down position. And then I was able to kind of shift. He ended up shooting low blocker there, but keeping the puck out.
My head's spinning.
I'm trying to talk quick. The plays go quick, but if I could stop it point by point, I could slow down a little bit. I felt like I was kind of speed talking there.
The evolution of the studio hasn't advanced to that degree yet. But I think what people will take away from this, not only that you know goaltending inside out, but how much of video studied helps along the way, and if you know certain tendencies and how certain plays might develop, how you have to react when it does come down to a situation that you've seen on tape. But how much of it is still left for sheer instinct? How much do you want to play in structure, and how much do you leave for desperation or the unexpected?
Well, usually all your pre-scout stuff is just going to help you on the first shot. It can help you anticipate, like I said earlier, arriving set and square on the first initial plays. So one of the things that Marcus did really well with the pre-scouts is that he would give tendencies on zone entries, ozone settled offense, and then, you know, when you're shorthanded and penalty kill, being able to notice what sort of setup the other team has. And then for me, it's I'm looking for righty lefties on certain part of the ice. Is somebody in a one time position, or are they on their off wing where they have to catch and release? And so that's a cue for me, is if a guy's catching on his offhand, that gives me time to beat a play on my feet. Or if they're in a one timer position, okay, I'm gonna have to beat that usually with a slide. So those are the detail things that we're looking at. But as soon as that first shot is taken and you're in a rebound situation, then you're going on to what you're talking about, and that's instinct. And from there, that's where the fun part of the position is. It's back to the street hockey. It's whatever it takes to make the save. And that's where, you know, you can acquire some of those skills just through compete. It's not really something that you can pre-plan, because you have to use those instincts. And I think above all, it's just whatever it takes to make the save.
What I've always been wondering about, and you just saying that, did you try to look at certain players, tendencies, lefties, righties, but at one point you need to start focusing on the guy having the puck or trying to shoot the puck or pass the puck. And there's always this instance where people try to sneak behind a goal where you know that they're in somewhere around your back. How much like corner of the eye feeling, or for the lack of a better word, how much you try to subconsciously try to have it in the back of your head, there's still a man somewhere outside, and if need be, I need to make that desperation save to the far left or to the far right.
Yeah, it's I think one of the skills that you know, I think I picked up and made it more of a habit later in my career was just shoulder checking the slot, and just when plays are in the corner, that's kind of your cue to shoulder check and see where your one-timer options are, whether they're in the right in the middle of the ice in the slot or whether they're the back post. And then certainly with the pre-scouts, where if you can see it on video where you see a weak side defenseman that activates, you know, to the far post, you know, certainly Salzburg was a team that would activate that. Klagenfurt, another one too, where they would have active D. You had other teams too, and I remember when we were playing Faroe, they had a lot of three. They like to roll three high in the zone, and so that gives them different one-timer options and screen deflection looks. So certainly, yeah, the pre-scouts help with that, but I think you always got to be shoulder checking both in zone settle offense and then off the rush.
When talking to the greatest goaltender of the Winter Day Ice Hockey League, I thought it might be a neat thing to hear from the greatest goal scorer in Winter Day Ice Hockey League history. So I reached out to Brian Lebler and asked him what he has to say about the great Jean-Philippe Lamoureux.
JP, congratulations, buddy, on your unbelievable career. I got asked to do a little video for you, and I couldn't be more honored. You've been a competitor since the day I met you, played against you right till the end. I mean, that's something unbelievable to do. I think that's every hockey player's dream, is to play, you know, till they're around 40 years old and still play at the highest level, and that's what you did. And I mean, that's something that I would love to be able to do and accomplish, and you did it. And I think for me as well, it was a pleasure and an honor playing against you. I love just coming down on you and trying to figure out what you were thinking, and you were trying to think what I was thinking, where I was going to go, and it was a constant little bit of mind games of figuring out how to stop me, and me trying to figure out how to score on you. And I couldn't have been more fun kind of dynamic. And then in Salzburg too, we got to meet up and play together finally, and your family welcomed my family right away, and that was a really nice for us to go into the situation and you and your family and to be there and being welcoming to us, and couldn't be more thankful. And yeah, I wish you all the best in the future. Yeah, one of the greats, baby. Love it. Take care.
Yeah. Another high praise again from one of the best, like you said, not one of the best, but the best goal scorer in our league. And we have some history. We played against each other when he was at Michigan. I was at North Dakota. And so we had some good battles in the NCAA regionals against each other. And, I mean, Brian, what can you say about him? Maybe the heaviest shot in league history. For a guy who doesn't take a ton of one-timers, just a guy that can beat a lot of goalies clean and from distance. So getting a chance to play with him in Salzburg, and
finally having him on your team.
Yeah, and then just seeing how he works, you know, what he likes to look for, you know, when where he's trying to find his spots, where he likes to shoot the puck, his shooting style. I try to pay attention to that because I knew it would be useful at some point. I don't think it worked out too well, though, because I think he definitely had my number this year. But Brian was, you know, he's a great goal scorer. He's a really smart player where he's able to find pockets of the ice and receive the puck and get his lethal shot off. And, you know, just a ton of respect for the competitor that he is above all else. You know, winning a championship in Linz early in his career and then with us in Salzburg where, you know, he had just massive, huge goals for us in that playoff run. And you know, just a great captain, leader for Linz for so many of the years, and then just a wonderful family man too.
Just for the sake of the argument, a couple of months ago, Rob Dahm was sitting right in this spot, and we were talking about the greatest shot, and he's been in the league just as long as you've been, or he's been following the league just as long as you've been in the league, and he said Brian Lebler, without a question, greatest shot he's ever seen. Would you agree?
Yeah. It's the numbers don't lie, and I just have the bruises to prove it too. Because when that guy gets it off, man, it's heavy. It's it just has something different on it than when other guys shoot. So the only thing I can say is, you know, he finds a way to get a shot off, and then when he does, it's it just packs a different punch than when other guys shoot.
But just getting back to that anticipation and that Marcus mentioned when breaking down the clip, and now that Brian mentioned it too. You try to think what he thinks. He tries to think what you're thinking. Take us on the inside of, like, your perspective when Lebler got the puck. How did it go? What? How many tiny little wheels had to rattle in your head to make things work?
Well, I just know that when he gets the puck, it's going to be off in a hurry, and that's he likes to find the soft areas off the cycle, and his shot release is usually going to be just inside the circle, above the faceoff dots. It's usually a spot of the ice that he tends to find pretty regularly, and then he's going to be shooting generally. I would probably say he's usually shooting to the blocker side of the net, from my perspective. And he could hit his spots. He wasn't just, you know, one special spot of the net. It was just kind of a general area. But because he would get it off quick and with some velocity, he's able to score like he does. And then he does a really great job off the rush too. I mean, if he has a clear-sighted shot, you know, on a 2-on-1, 3-on-2, you know, it's a really dangerous chance to go into the net because, again, he gets it off with velocity and he can just overpower goalies with that release.
Then again, this episode of Win Today Hockey O'Clock is about you, not Brian Leveler, but eventually we're going to come for you, Brian. So thank you so much for sending in sending me this video message. Because even though you had to compete more often than you played with, compete against Brian Leveler more often than you played with him, you accumulated a lot of wins. We've already mentioned it at the top of the show. The most wins in league history. Only, if we look at the graphics, 4 off and even 400. Did you ever think about the 400, or did you take it as wins went?
Well, when you're 4 away, 400 looks pretty nice. But I'm just grateful that for the longevity. I know. So my last year in Salzburg, I had the tough knee injury. And we were kind of flirting with, is this a career-ending injury? Is this how it kind of ends? And that happens for players. You have to retire based on injury, and your body just can't do it anymore. And so I think without just the patience with the Red Bull organization, the incredible doctors and physio staff that we had there, it allowed me the time to get back and get healthy. And so, you know, we're probably not even close to the 400 number. You know, if it ends there, that last year in Salzburg in 21-22, but it was kind of the time that I needed to get healthy. And then once I was healthy and felt comfortable, I'm like, yeah, I can get back to the level where I was at. I want to get to 40. I want to play till then. So this was you know, it's a great number. 400 looks nice when you're 4 away, but I'm just grateful for the opportunity to play till I did.
Because the crazy thing is, there are only 2 active goaltenders on this list with Sebastian Dahme and René Svete. And Sebastian Dahme is 184 wins away from you. So he needs to play probably in his mid-40s and have a Tom Brady-ish career as a hockey goaltender to even get close to the record. So I guess it's safe to say that this one will stand the maybe not the test of time, but will stand for a couple more years, if not decades. The interesting thing is, once you got that win record, it happened in your MVP year. In the 2019-2020 season with Salzburg, you recorded your 255th victory, surpassing Gerd Prohaska in your 431st league game. So you hadn't even gotten the games played record yet, but already the wins record. Was that something that you knew about?
At the time, yes. And I think it's what's special to me about it is when I first came to VLOC, one of the first people to meet me when I got in town was Gerd. And so you get a chance to meet him, and he said, you know, he's introducing you to the city, and then you kind of learn the history of the club, and then him as a goaltender, you know, at the time when he left, most accomplished goaltender the league had seen. And so to be just a wonderful human being as Gerd Prohaska is, it's a big honor. So a record I wouldn't, you know, I don't take lightly when you're surpassing somebody like that.
And I shared this, or I have to share the sentiment. Gerd's not only a great color commentator on the Fila live streams, but he also guested a couple years ago here on Winter Day Hockey O'Clock. We dedicated 4 episodes to his iconic 4 championship wins in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League. So if you want to learn a little more on Gerd Prohaska and his career trajectory, please listen to the series that's called 4, in honor of the 4 Austrian championships that he won. The most wins, that doesn't come by coincidence. I know it's a lot of hard work. I know it's a lot of structure. But once that structure falls apart and we get to the desperation or the street hockey part that you alluded to, this is where sometimes the most fun things are happening for goaltenders. I think it was Sebastian Dam who said, if you need desperation more often than not, then you've done something completely wrong as a goaltender. But when it gets to out-of-structure plays, and this is where Marcus Kerschbaumer comes in again, and he provided probably the steal of the century, it's always amazing how goalies behave. And this time around, it's only one clip. I think this is a clip that still gives Emilio Romig nightmares. In a game between Villach and Linz, net wide open as a forward, you dream of something like this, and then you get plain and simply put, robbed. Do you remember that play?
Yeah, it was a tight game. Just in particular, I believe it was the 3-4-1 final for us, or 3-2 or something like that. But on this particular play, they have a zone entry net drive here, and the guy's going to carry it across the slot line. I kind of trying to hold my ice on the net drive as a right-handed shooter. I'm protecting the low middle part of the net. I turn my stick to the outside to kind of poke check and take away that slot line look. And there's a little bit of contact, so it throws my feet off. So ideally, you know, what Sebastian's talking about here is that you would want like a strong push where you would be sliding in your butterfly, but there's just not enough time to do it. So then I have early eyes on the play, which helps me. And then because I have early eyes, I'm like, okay, I think I can get my hands across. And then it's not an orthodox play, but desperation, and you feel like you have a chance on it if you have early eyes.
We were already talking a little bit about instinct, but granted, you play in structure as much as possible. You do all the things the right way, the footwork, the puck tracking, the anticipation. But once you have to shift to that desperation mode, is there a blueprint for it?
One of the things I worked on with Ian Clark in back in my early days was we actually try to work on structure and desperation plays. And what you want to try to do
is... So there's chaos within chaos.
Yeah. And
or he, structure within chaos.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's trying to create a structure. And it's not necessarily, you're not going to recreate the same sort of save technique on those situations, but you want to try to eliminate the low middle part of the net first and then try to build on top of that. And so, and the other component is that is try to get to as close to the puck as possible. So usually on plays like this, it's plays that are a stick length away from the crease. And so it's just about trying to attack wherever the puck is. And that gives you a good chance to eliminate, you know, the vertical angle of the shot release. But trying to package your body in a unique way that eliminates, you know, the low middle part first and then trying to build on top of it, whether that's with an arm, your hand, you know, in some situations you might stack the pads or something like that. But it does come down to, as long as that's in the back of your head and then you have just whatever it takes to make the save, you give yourself an opportunity to make those desperation saves in certain situations. It's hard to recreate because you don't know what that play is going to look like, but it always comes back to the competitive part of the position.
But is there indeed a way of practicing desperation saves? Is it like you being in one corner of the net and you knowing that the shot will go in the other corner of the net and you trying to make your way over as fast as possible? Are there drills for it?
Yeah, well, Ian had a good drill. We called it the Hasek drill, and it was pretty basic. It was, we were going to start in our down,
did
in
you
our
have
butterfly.
To stand up too?
No, we started in a down position actually. But if you can imagine, you're square to the opposite faceoff dot. He has a puck on the opposite dot, and then on his go, you're going to do sort of like a Dominic Hasek roll backwards. And so what he wants to do is he wanted to try to recreate a desperation scenario where you don't have a clean look at the puck, but you're trying to locate it with your eyes visually. So the premise is protect the low middle part of the net and then build on top of it, but try to gain a sight line while you're doing that. And then when the puck comes to the net, try to get back to your butterfly position as quick as possible, because that's where your technical structure will come back into play. But that initial look is going to be sort of a desperation play to start. But there are ways to practice it. It's I think the best way to do it, though, is you create live puck situations where after we have a, you know, a certain game situation we're practicing, as soon as that first puck comes to the net, then it's a live puck. And then it's whatever goes. And then that's where you can kind of pull out some of those spectacular saves that, you know, we dream about making sometimes.
I guess it's fair to assume that the team, whoever you'll be coaching, wherever you'll be getting into coaching, there are going to be some fun drills waiting for the goaltenders. If you just take a page out of Ian Clark's playbook and Marcus Cashbaum's playbook and all the other things that you're going to add on top. Your longevity in this league, it's also led to not only you accumulating the most win, as we've seen in the previous graphics, but also the most games played. And if we just consider the fact for a moment that hockey is physically incredibly demanding and that you're next to the referees, one of the very few athletes being on the ice for 60 minutes or more, how much does it mean that you bested another Gerd Prochazka record by more than 200 games?
I mean, it's humbling just to, when you see yourself at the top of, you know, a certain statistical metric. You know, it shows that you were able to execute your daily plan consistently. And for me, it was, I wanted to be a number one goalie. I wanted to be relied upon playing almost every game. And in doing that, give your team a chance to win every time you step onto the ice. And so the responsibility of that is taking care of your body, learning new systems to, you know, for the goaltenders, it was hip maintenance, making sure my hips and my mobility was top notch, and just having a consistent routine that you return to every single day that helps your body feel great every time you step onto the ice. And so combine that with solid practice habits with the goalie coaches that I've had, and it gives you a really good opportunity to play a lot and then play at a high level.
You broke Gerd Prochazka's record for most games played in the aforementioned 1920 season that also brought you your first and only MVP award, the Ron Kennedy Trophy, season that will be collectively remembered because of a global virus outbreak that cost us the season, Salzburg being number one at the end of the regular season, the presumptive favorite to potentially win it all. How do you look back on a year that brought you so many records, a trophy everybody covets, and then standing in front of a big vastness of not having playoffs?
Yeah, that was, it leaves a really empty feeling in your stomach. And I think I can speak for most of the staff and players, for our, not only our team, but I think, you know, for the whole league, where you are kind of robbed of the opportunity to compete for a championship. And for our group in Salzburg, as you mentioned, we were, you know, comfortably in first place at the end of the regular season, had a 2-1 lead at the start of the first round. And we felt really strongly that we were going to be in the finals competing for a championship. I felt like I was playing the best hockey I've played in my whole career. Had a team in front of me that gave me a really great environment to play behind, and one of the best coaching staffs I think I've ever played for in Matt McElvain, Matt Smaby, and Chris Spahr. And I really believe that we were going to go all the way that year, and it's just going to be one of those asterisks kind of in the career of what if, and people are going to debate, which is the fun part for the fans. But I think for sure we would have been in the finals competing for a championship against, you know, another one of the strong teams of the league.
I remember covering the first two games of that series, and then moving on to another series that will forever have an asterisk with Linz, one game, or being one game away from sweeping the reigning champions. A lot of things that went into this year, that, and a lot of answers that we still ask ourselves. Would Salzburg have won it? Probably, yes. Or would Linz have been the hot team to beat? Maybe. COVID robbed us of a lot of things, but at the very least, the records are here to stay, and here obviously to be beaten. But if we look at the graphics again, only one goaltender in the top five still active, two goaltenders out of the top eight in this case, with Dam, Svete, and Madlena being the only ones who presumptively play next year. So that record will be safe for another couple of years. As your career went from Vienna to Salzburg and then back to Villa, you had a lot of coaches. You had a lot of different players you played with and against. And one of the dearest friends of this program, and when preparing for this, I thought I'd have to reach out because he's always one who puts things not only in perspective, but I like when great teachers of the game talk about great players of the game, and there's probably none better than the winningest coach. We've heard from the best goal scorer. We're talking to the best goaltender. It's time to hear from the winningest head coach in Winter Day Ice Hockey League history. It's, of course, Rob Daum.
I had the misfortune of coaching against JP many times in my career, and then I had the pleasure of working with him at the later stages of his time in the league in Villach. And it was definitely a wonderful experience for me to have the opportunity to work with such a professional. JP was always very well prepared, always took care of his body, always got himself in a mental frame to play the game at the highest level. One of the things I remember in one of my first conversations with JP was I was sitting down with him and we were discussing the importance of him as a veteran player being able to provide some leadership for the team. And as a goalie, that can be a difficult situation. I was asking him how he would be able to find the balance between preparing himself, which was very, very important, obviously, but also still being able to lend some of his expertise and leadership to the team. And JP put it very succinctly, and he said, "I'm going to go to Goalie Island." And I said, "Well, where exactly is Goalie Island?" And he said, "Well, that's where I go when I forget about all the distractions and all the things that I can't control, and I just go to Goalie Island and take care of my game and let everything flow from there." And I thought that was a very good summation of how JP handled himself as a professional, always had himself ready to play and ready to go, and was an elite goalie his entire career, and obviously was one of the most outstanding goalies in the history of the Ice Hockey League. It's JP, congratulations on an outstanding, wonderful career, and I wish you all the best in the future. Take care of yourself and your family. Miss you. See you.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of playing under Rob for the two seasons in Villach. And, you know, another high praise from one of the most accomplished coaches the league here has seen. And, you know, we had some great conversations early in the season. And when you're an older player, you know, I remember that conversation in his office, just trying to see where can I add value to the team outside of the goaltending element. And it is a balancing act as a goaltender. You can't really be, I would say, in a role that a captain would play. It's a little challenging, but it can be, guys can do it. And I think the goaltenders that do it the best are, number one, they take care of their game first and they provide the stability and consistency that the team needs. You try to be vocal where you can to help younger players and other players in the lineup. And I think above all, you just have to lead by example, and then that will show through. And then big moments will emerge throughout the season. And it's just being able to provide a calm presence in the locker room and then on the ice. And then you just try to find pockets where you can impact individuals and impact your team. And that was the moment Rob's talking there, is just trying to, where are we going to find that balance this year? And so he was always great to me with the opportunity to play and then where I can add value to the team.
How does it look on Goalie Island?
Well, it's beautiful. It's a metaphor that Kershie and I had kind of come up with. And sometimes when you go through ups and downs of a season, you know, goaltenders, and I'm guilty of it throughout my career, is you start worrying things outside your control, outside your sphere of influence. And so I think, you know, we had talked, and if I'm being too vocal about other parts of the team's game that I can't really control, I can have an opinion on it, but I really can't do anything about it. And so if I'm putting my attention too much on that, that means I'm taking away attention on the thing that I can impact the most, and that's my preparation, my performance, execution, how I handle adversity. And that was a metaphor that we used, where if I felt like I was kind of straying from that line that where I need to be mentally, then it was a way for him to say, okay, I need to step back, I need to shut up and just go do my job, do it well, and be prepared. And we're not going to concentrate on any of the external things that the team is doing. And I think what that does for the goaltenders, it puts you in the right headspace, game to game, to go out and execute your job as best you can.
If you look at your career, did you have to go to Goalie Island more often at the earlier stages of your career or at the later stages of your career?
Well, I probably should have went there more often earlier in my career, I think. So based on, you know, you showed the highlight of the penalty minutes, and I think those are from like maybe the first three or four seasons of the league, but and I was able to calm things down in that regard. But yeah, it's a useful metaphor. And I mean, you know, if there's young goalies out there kind of listening to this too, I mean, you can take that metaphor and, you know, turn it into anything you want. I think any player that's playing, sometimes you need to kind of go within yourself to get yourself into the right headspace so that you can go out and perform your job well and still add value to your teammates around you and contribute to the overall team goals. And so I think what I had figured out was that if I'm the best version of myself, that's how I help the team the most. And then when you're doing that, try to find areas in the team dynamic to lead in other ways. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to wear a letter, but you can lead in other ways that are impactful for the team.
You labeled it being in getting into the right headspace, and granted, when talking about goaltending, it's so much more about the mental aspects of the game than it is maybe with other positions in hockey, and a lot of teams have started to work with mental coaches or professionals in that regard. Did you ever do that, or was that all done by yourself?
A combination of both. I mean, you play for inspirational coaches. I've been just really fortunate to play for a lot of great coaches over the years. And, you know, there's moments in a season where they are able to rally the team, get a team going in a better direction than where you currently are. The mental side of the game was something I desperately wanted to be good at. And, you know, I have done a lot of research just on my own. I kind of leaned a lot on books. Some guys like to play cards and, you know, video games on the bus. I was just a reader. I thought it was just a good mental release for me with the pressures of playing the position. And so I kind of studied everything from different psychology books to philosophy and things like that. And you try to build a system that you can use that's applicable throughout the season. And it ends up becoming a trial and error thing. You know, this way of thinking helped me here. This one wasn't as relevant. And you just kind of go on through trial and error and try to build something that works for your personality. So if I was giving advice to a younger player, it would be, I can give you, you know, the scaffolding to build the structure you want. But ultimately, you have to make the micro adjustments in how you want to think, how you want to package it for yourself so that it's impactful for your game.
You've taken away my next question. Yeah. What particular thing might have helped you along the way? So I'm kind of rerouting a little bit, and just with the longevity and the tremendously successful career that you enjoyed, at what point, or did you ever have the feeling that you mastered the mental game, or is it always trying to get as close as possible to perfection because perfection is unreachable?
Yeah, I don't think I ever reached kind of the pinnacle, at least in my opinion. Like I said, it was something I desperately wanted to master and be great at. And it is difficult. Where do you, you know, where does an individual athlete say that, yeah, I've achieved that? It's kind of difficult. It's kind of almost more for other people to say. But I can honestly say that I did everything possible within my power to try to be as good at it as I could. And then the testing ground is your season. That's where you pressure test your skills throughout the course of a season and in playoffs. And, you know, you're challenged with different elements of adversity, and you want to try to respond the best way you can. And there are so many things that are outside of the goaltender's control as far as, you know, the wins and losses and the playoff wins and losses. But, you know, you want to try to make sure, I always wanted to try to make sure that I was responding as confidently and as well as I could in each situation.
Which brings us to again, the body of work. We split up what you did for all the clubs into another graphics. We know that you won two championships, one with Salzburg, one with Vienna. Those two championships will never be taken away from you. We've talked about all the individual accolades. If we just look at the numbers on the right-hand side, the win percentages, the lowest was during that 1 year, and it was a challenging year for Ljubljana with 52%. All the others sit north of 55%. Three of those north of 60%. Even if we look at the bottom right-hand number with the overall win percentage being a 60% goalie, right? What you initially said that one of your goals. I have some more numbers. You played so many games, 658. In those games, you conceded, I think you don't want to hear that number, 1,581 goals. You had to save 19,160 pucks. That would mean that your overall save percentage, and I know the league numbers are a little dodgy, but in this case, I'm really trusting them because I want this to be very true. Your overall save percentage sits at 92.4%. I looked up the NHL records. Dominik Hašek and Ken Dryden are both tied at 92.2, so you bested them in that regard. I know it's a little bit apples and oranges.
I think two different planets. But
but that's not too bad, and you spent 38,869 minutes on the ice, on a winter day ice hockey league. That's 27 days. Just imagine for the people out there listening and viewing, doing nothing but being in a crease for 27 days straight. That's the body of work.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what to say. I got to live my dream for, I think I remember committing, saying I want to be a hockey player when I was 8 or 9 years old. This is what I love to do. I want to emulate my father. And then obviously as you grow up, you you have other heroes. You know, my heroes were, locally it was Carl Gehring, who was a college goalie for the University of North Dakota. He was an undersized goalie, national champion, one of the all-time greats, in my opinion, the best in UND history. And then Eddie Belfour played at North Dakota, went on to have a Hall of Fame career. We became friendly over time. He was a guy I tried to emulate my game after, technically, and with his mentality. And so those people inspire you to want to do that. And so I just look back and you see the body of work. Just grateful for the opportunity to make a career over here in Europe. And I think it was good advice from Ian that he said, I think you can make a great career over here. And I think maybe he knew something that I didn't at the time, but I think he was pretty bang on with the body of work that's shown here, and I'm just grateful for the opportunity for, you know, all four clubs that give me a chance to be a number one.
Just got two more things on the agenda, but one of the very important things is if people out there listening or viewing this right now, you can learn from the best our league has seen. Your goalie camps that have become a staple of your summer program, they're still ongoing. Where are they happening and what can you learn apart from tons of things from you?
Yeah, well, I've actually, I've been doing the camps since I came over to Europe. So 14 years I've been doing the camps. I do it in my hometown of Grand Forks, North Dakota. They're hosted at the Ralph Engelstad Arena, which is the home rink of my college. And then for an entire month, I do camps for youth kids. I do 2 weeks of youth camps. So that would be, you know, your U8s all the way through U12s will be in one group. And then we have our elite camp, which is second year Pee-wee. So that would be U13s through 17U. And then I have a select camp that is specifically for the higher end high school age kids in our area. And we try to move them on to being on the junior radar to play junior hockey. And so I've been doing that for a month for the last 14 years, and it's been really rewarding to try to give back to my hometown in the best way that I can, which is through hockey knowledge and the spirit of goaltending. And so I'm going to continue to do that when I go home and try to impact and help kids achieve their hockey dreams.
God forbid my sons ever become goalies, but if they do, and Martin P. from Austria wants to send over his sons to learn from the best? Would European kids get into your camps too?
If they're able to make the flight over, we welcome everybody. So, and I do have to, as far as the camps go, my camps are not possible without my wife Kelly, who's really helped me on the business side and the organizational parts of the camp and the correspondence. And it's kind of been for 14 years truly a team effort from her to make sure the camps run as well as they do, and I certainly couldn't do it without her.
If we piqued someone's interest, there will be a link in the show notes of this podcast that will direct you to the goalie camps. Yep, flights probably not too affordable, but North Dakota, as far as I heard things, is a beautiful piece of land. And hey, why not learn the intricacies of goaltending during summertime? This space has been reserved for a very special person in your career. He helped me tremendously in terms of the preparation of this podcast. And of course, the last word about the great Jean-Philippe Lamoureux belongs to no one else than Markus Kerschbaumer.
Hey, Phil. Congrats to your great career. Your passion, your dedication, your attention to details every day is second to none. I'm really grateful that I was part of your journey for several years, and I learned a lot from you, to be honest. I was back then when we started our journey, I was still a young goalie coach, and I have to say there's still a lot of JP in my coaching. All the best, and I'm pretty sure you have a great coaching career in front of you. Take care.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate. Kirsch and I were in the trenches together for 7 years. We love talking goaltending with each other, and not just like a coaching player relationship. Like it's going to be a genuine lifelong friendship between us. And retired this year, but he's going to be a person that I keep in touch with forever.
The interesting word that he mentioned was journey. That more often than not is indeed the case when you look at long careers. The journey that you two started on, that where you reconnected in Salzburg, you're still staying connected even though you're not playing anymore. He's still in Salzburg. When you look back on that journey, what remains, what stands out?
I think initially when I first came over, there was a world of possibilities. This could turn into something great, or this could be, this could end in a hurry. So there was definitely some risk coming over. But I think all great things take an element of risk and kind of betting on yourself. And so you lean on advice from people you respect. And so I did that with the initial nudge to give it a shot. The journey is you meet so many great people along the way. It's not just about the wins and losses and trying to compete for championships, but there's so many great people that are involved in all the organizations, everybody that works within the staff, the teams within the team that allow us to do this job. The journey of, meeting Marcus, who is the most influential person I came across that helped give me the longevity. You have great coaches along the way. Hanu being one of the first that allowed me to be a starting goalie for him for 4.5 seasons. And then meeting Sergio Ban in Vienna, he's going to go on and be one of the great all-time European coaches. I got to think he's knocking on the NHL door. Matt McElveen, incredible human being, learned so much from him, grateful. And then being able to team up with Rob Dom at the end, learned a lot from him systems-wise. And then Trey Tuomi in the last year here, incredible. But I think the biggest thing, the journey of a family. So my wife, Kelly, and I, she believed in me to take this leap of faith and try to build a life in Europe. And I can honestly say she feels deeply rooted to this country. We had our two kids here who we immersed in the culture and grew up here. And so I think when we look back on the journey, we picked just an incredible place to start a family, raise a family, and feel strongly connected to. And so for us, Austria really became like our second home, if not our primary home. And so we're grateful for the opportunity to play this great game and try to grow it in this area of Europe. And we're deeply connected to Austria.
So before we get to the very last piece on the agenda and you get a little giveaway, a lot of fans are asking, of course, what's next for you?
Yeah, it's certainly coaching. And, you know, I think my long-term coaching goals, I would like to start out as an assistant coach to develop to be a head coach at some point. Obviously, I don't have any coaching experience yet because I have been fortunate to play so long. But I'm ready to kind of pay my dues in that regard and get the experience that I need to be ready for that position. And, you know, I see my next 15 years as trying to be coaching at a really high level.
I don't know if you're going to wear it while you're coaching, but you most definitely deserve it. A couple of years ago, we had the distinct honor here at Win Today to have our very own Hockey O'Clock podcast jerseys. They're all 100 of those jerseys have been produced, but these 100 are all special pieces because every number exists only once, and gives me great pleasure to officially retire number one. Right. This will be yours to keep. Thank you so much for gracing the league with your play. Thank you so much for doing this, talking to me at length. Really enjoyed seeing you play, really enjoyed the standard that you set, and really enjoyed you educating me and so many other people about hockey. Thank you so much.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
On a great career.
Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move, another nice move.